Happy to see everyone on the last day of March. Unbelievable. This morning, I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2094. Do we have anyone to... Kara, you want to talk about this and get us all caught up on this?
I think Patrick Allen has signed up to testify as he has amendments to propose to the committee. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2094, you'll recall, deals with extended term licenses for people who have licenses from various agencies within the state of Oregon. And rather than me spending lots of time on that, I think it would make most sense for Patrick Allen to come forward and explain his amendments as they do change the bill. I know that Mr. Allen's been working with a work group of interested folks on finding amendment language that meets everyone's needs.
Okay, if the Office of Regulatory Streamlining can come forward.
The whole office.
Thanks, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Patrick Allen with the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. It seems like it might have been last session when you first heard this bill. It was actually very early this session. At your first hearing on this bill, the committee raised some issues having to do with how extended term licenses might be offered. Those were presented back to you in the form of Dash 1 amendments, which you have previously seen. At the time you saw those Dash 1 amendments, concerns about how this bill would apply to liquor licenses through the Liquor Control Commission were raised, and since you've last heard this bill, I've been working with the Restaurant Association, League of Cities, City of Portland, and OLCC to see if we could figure out a way to further modify this bill to address their concerns. The Dash 2 amendments you have in front of you then incorporate the Dash 1s you previously saw and deal with the additional issues that we've raised and I believe dealt with. The bottom line is we have really changed, I think, the thrust of this bill. As originally introduced, what it basically did was allowed an agency to say, it's safe, so from now on this one-year license is a three-year license. Let an agency blanketly make a license longer term. With these amendments now, that changes somewhat to something that's still very, very useful and still represents good streamlining, but it is different. It allows agencies by rule to establish a set of criteria for which particular licensees can qualify for extended license terms. So it's basically saying if you're a particularly a good player in whatever the area we're licensing, you now can get out of the annual or biennial licensing requirement that we have. The bill does this by providing that extended license terms are only on renewal, so an initial person has to go through the initial licensing period to demonstrate a track record. It allows the agency to establish what are the specific criteria, including any kind of criteria for discipline, and to deal with the issue raised by parties having to do with liquor licenses. Basically, the provision now says that if there's a statutory provision for local government to make a comment on a license renewal, and a local government makes comments that are about a topic that is part of the licensing criteria, then that would make a licensee ineligible for an extended term license. And we think that has taken care of that set of issues. Also, makes clear that if you're disciplined as a licensee, one of the things that you can lose in that discipline process is that extended license term, and you go back into whatever the statutory term is. We've also, I think, the final change is we've provided some clarifying language on how license fees are adjusted. The intent of this is to be relatively revenue neutral. So, you know, if you have a 1-year license, it becomes a 4-year license. The idea is that the license fee would be obviously capped at 4 times what the 1-year license fee is. That's kind of a run through of what's there. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions, Representative Cameron, who wasn't here when back in the dark ages when we
last session.
Morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
Question then. So, what I just heard you say, basically on liquor licenses, they won't be eligible to extend past an annual renewal basis because all liquor licenses have, from my understanding, have an opportunity for public comment or local.
Yep. Chair Berger, Representative Cameron, no, they would still continue, they would continue to be eligible. The issue is if a local government comments and says, we don't think they should, would make some kind of a negative comment about that particular licensee, and that negative comment is related to their licensing criteria, then that would prevent them from being eligible for an extended term license. If there's no comment, they would, in fact, be eligible for that extended term.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you
very much,
Pat. We still are in public hearing. I'm deeply appreciative of the folks who've been working on this and have come together and put the amendments together. Is there anyone else that wants to comment before I close public hearing on this particular bill? I'm seeing head shakes, so I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2094 and open a work session on House Bill 2094.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2094 be amended with the -2 amendments.
Representative Sumner moves the -2 amendments to House Bill 2094. Any objection? So moved.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2094 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Sumner moves to House Bill 2094 with a due as amended with the -2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objections? So moved. Before I close this public hearing, do I have someone who is just dying to carry this?
I'd be glad to, Madam Chair.
I got two takers, and since you moved it, Representative Sumner, you win it.
Yeah.
Representative Sumner will carry this bill for us, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2094, and again, thank all the folks who worked so hard on this. At this time, I'd like to open a sort of a huge public hearing on House Bill, I'd like to open all of these bills, House Bill 2157, House Bill 2059, House Bill 2061, and House Bill 2102. And Kara, would you please sort of frame the discussion here on all of these?
Now you remember to call.
Yeah, right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to start with House Bill 2157, which may have been in that earlier session that Mr. Allen spoke to. It's been so long since you've seen it. But you will recall that was the bill brought to us by the state police. The bill provides a way for local government agencies to request state and nationwide fingerprinting background checks for persons hired into positions of public trust and sensitive information. At the time that we had our first hearing on this bill, you were told that the state police is working with legislative council on some extension of amendments. Those amendments were dropped in your office a couple of days ago. I'm sure you've read all 19 pages of them and understand them thoroughly. If that's not the case, the state police representatives are here today to visit with us about that. Subsequent to our committee being assigned House Bill 2157, the Health and Human Services Committee was assigned HB 2059, 2061, and 2102. The three bills are very similar in nature, dealing with fingerprinting authorities for the Board of Medical Examiners, the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, and the Board of Nursing. And as these bills were being heard in Health and Human Services and information became available that the state police bill was with general government, the thought that general government may be the place for all these bills to come together into some form to make sure that they are not conflicting with each other, that regulations are similar, that that if indeed you approve the bill and send it on to your colleagues on the floor, that what's outlined in the bill meets standards of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and that's why you have all four of those bills together today, because they all deal with fingerprinting in one way or another. And I think it would be best, Madam Chair, to have the representatives of each of the three boards speak directly to their needs for the bills. But I would suggest that you start with the state police, who can introduce the amendments to you.
So, good plan. As everyone knows, I'm looking at a work group on this, but let's ask Patricia Whitfield to come up, and on deck, Andrea Meyer, with issues from the ACLU, and let's remind ourselves of what this is all about, and then I'll ask each of the other folks who have already been through this once in a different committee, but I think that there's a real need to put this together into a cogent sort of a whole rather than piecemeal it. So thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Patricia Whitfield, Identification Services Section Director, Oregon State Police, and thank you for the opportunity to discuss House Bill 2157 again. Since the first hearing, State Police has continued to work with numerous agencies and their needs regarding this bill and putting together the amendments to further make improvements on the written bill, and I believe you have those amendments before you. I was hoping that, if I may, I could briefly go over the written bill, just again as a refresher,
please,
and then go into some of the highlights of the amendments. I can certainly be as brief or as detailed as you care to hear when I get to that point, but I've narrowed it down somewhat. Hopefully we'll explain the intent for the changes. First of all, in the written bill, Section 1, it does provide for local government agencies to access state and FBI nationwide criminal history record information when an ordinance is passed where fingerprints are required. That was based on the need of local government contacting us through the local law enforcement agencies. Section 2 was to provide a blanket or a standard type process for the background checks through state and FBI, something that we felt was really an important piece as sort of cleanup, because there are so many different agencies with varying levels of access, and some were successful getting what they were looking for, and some were not, based on language that wasn't approved by FBI. So we were looking at this as the standard and a cleanup. Sections 3 through 45, again, part of the cleanup, we're bringing those agencies that had their own statutes and those varying levels, bring those together, and where there could be commonality or process, add a read-with statement. That was a suggestion from the FBI that would tie them back to Section 2 of the bill and have them use this common process, but where they had their own individual agency needs that went beyond that, retain those within their own statute. And then those sections also included some agencies that had not previous access that had contacted us, and it made sense to, again, bring them together for commonality. That's my brief overview of the written bill. Going into the amendments, and because we really just got them late Monday, and I'm not sure that everyone's had a chance to look at them, I've received some input, some feedback from agencies, and they have some questions. I've put some questions back towards Legislative Council to help me understand, you know, how it's written, but I feel that she did an excellent job on the number of issues I submitted, so I'll go through those now. If you want care to follow along, page 1 references a number of additional statutes that are being amended, and that would reflect several agencies that have come forward after having heard about this bill and either wanting to make changes to their existing statute or to gain access for a first time. Also on page 1, section 1, council completely took the written language out and replaced it with language that was intended to be more specific to the type of checks that are being done. It was notably rather broad originally, and the attempt was to bring some more guidance or structure, as was listed in Section 2. All of these amendments have been sent to the FBI for review, just to make sure that they still meet the requirements, and in fact they do. There is one area of concern that FBI expressed that would not comply, and that is in Section 1 on page 2, line 3, referring to Transportation Transit Districts, ORS 267-3237. If I understand correctly, while they are recognized as a local government, them passing a resolution does not pass muster, and they're more appropriately placed in their own section, which they have been placed in Section 61. So I'm going to work with council on that for a further amendment. But I think that that's very doable, and it's just placing them in the appropriate place and continue to allow them the access that they currently have. On page 4, section 2, the Oregon State Bar was included under the definition of authorized agency, and that was because of their status as a quasi-state agency. They currently do have access to both state and FBI record checks, and this was just a matter of including them in keeping with the rest of the agencies. Any reference in Section 2 to qualified entity and specific agencies such as Department of Human Services and Employment Department were removed, making Section 2, trying to keep that into more of a common and generic type of process that we work to that will work best for everyone. Also, the term or reference to qualified vendor was removed because there is no such qualified vendor that can provide the exact same information that a fingerprint check can provide. Any reference to current employee backgrounds was removed specifically to allow that the process was for new employees only and not for current employees, and there were some agencies that had that language in their statutes. Page 5, section subsection 6, referring to permitting a subject individual to inspect their own criminal history. Just a point of clarification, I did not catch this on the original written bill, but FBI has given us the approval, the authority for state police and an authorized agency to share the results of the criminal history with the subject individual. It just makes sense. After the fingerprints have been done, we know it's positively their record, so it certainly is theirs and open for them to review, and if they have issues with it, then they go to the appropriate place to have that taken care of. So I would look to change that in a further amendment. Also on page 5, subsection 7, referencing access to Department of Human Services records, that was removed because it was unintentionally brought over from their current statute. There was never any intention for other agencies to access their database for record checks that they had done. Page 6, subsections 8, both A and B, a language was added referring to the contested case hearings, or the cases that the information is based on what was obtained as the result of the criminal history check, and that was at the recommendation of attorneys from DOJ to lessen the impact of the workload, make it more specific to those decisions. On page 7, subsection 9, was a request to add an immunity statement for agencies when they're making decisions, whether they've qualified or disqualified someone, or if they found them to be fit or not fit. Either way, in good faith, that clause was added. Page 7, Section 3. Section 3 primarily was intended to be preserved or reserved primarily for Department of Human Services and Employment Department, and maintain what current access they have and not mess too much with their statute. There have been some changes, however, to take out language that would be duplicating the Section 2 and bring them into the common area, but the intent was to leave their agency-specific issues alone in Section 3. One definition that was changed in that section is qualified entity, and that is on page 8. The reason for that is Department of Human Services does contract out, and their huge workload, they have assistance from agencies outside of their own that help them with the fitness determination. And while Department of Human Services has not lost anything as far as their access or their ability to make decisions being taken out of the definition of qualified entity, we felt it was important to keep it separate so that it didn't overflow into other areas. And that was just to keep a stronger line on the confidentiality and the access of the criminal histories. Page 15 is the next area of change. And on page 15, it refers to Section 6 of the written bill. I've not made very good notes here. Referring to DPSST, it also refers to the written bill, Section 7, Department of Energy, Section 8 in the written bill, State Fair and Exposition Center, Section 9 of the written bill, Department of Administrative Services, Section 10, Department of Transportation. On page 15, the changes remove reference to those checks on current employees and adds language that better meets their needs for either certification or recertification or reissuance of certificates. A little harder to follow along on that.
Yeah.
Sorry. I didn't do a good job explaining. I was referring back to the written bill, but to try and summarize it a little, on page 15, all of those various sections within the written bill are cleaned up in the same manner. Page 16 of the amendments, which refers to Section 11 of the written bill, and that's having to do with DPSST, private security officer checks, and Section 42 of the written bill, also Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, polygraph examiners. Both of those sections, the amendments returns the retention of fingerprint cards by the state police to keep their current process. It was, again, they were referred back to the Section 2 where all agencies, the fingerprint cards are destroyed. Currently, those two types of fingerprint cards are retained by the state police for follow-up because of it's the nature of those applications. Page 16, Section 19 of the bill referring to Teacher Standards and Practices Commission removes a reference to their $42 fee for doing the background checks and replaces language for the full cost of the background check, and that is due to Oregon State Police recently revising our fee structure and implementing a fee methodology, and we did increase our fees effective March 1, and their fee being in statute no longer met to cover the cost of providing those services. On page 16, also of the amendments referring to Section 22, subsection 5 of the written bill, and that refers to the Children's Advocate Group. My understanding or the input was that they did not have a desire to do a fingerprint check and just reverts them back to the name-only check that they currently do. also on page 16 and referring back to section 45 of the written bill, restores a provision that DHS seek federal funding to reduce the cost to providers for complying with 181537 and doing background checks that had been removed in the written bill. And starting on page 17 and going all the way through page 37, I tried to summarize that the following parts add further cleanup, and where appropriate, the agencies are pointed back to section 2 of the standard process with that read with statement in each of their enabling statutes. Some of the agencies already have state and FBI access. Some currently have only Oregon access, and again, that's part of putting this together, that if they desire to have both accesses, that they would be able to do that successfully with this bill. And those are the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, Board of Medical Examiners, Board of Nursing, State Lottery, the Judicial Department, Secretary of State, Board of Accountancy, Board of Dentistry, Parks and Recreation Department. One note on that, with their approval, I believe that we successfully took them out of 181537, which was specific to Department of Human Services and Employment Department, where they more appropriately do a different type of check. And the new Section 55 will allow for that. The new Section 56 on page 30, Oregon State Bar. New Section 57, Legislative Administrative Committee. That is an agency that currently, to my knowledge, has no access, so that is one where there's new access. New Section 58, Board of Naturopathic Examiners, is also a new agency wishing access to criminal history background checks. Section 59, Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board. New Section 60, Department of Fish and Wildlife. A note there is they would like to add firearm safety and master hunter training background checks. Apparently they have folks that are out working with the public and sometimes children, and they are working with guns. And the new Section 61, as I referred to previously, the Transportation District. New Section 62 amends the old Section 45 of the bill. And then lastly, the new Section 63 adds an emergency clause on passage. And that piece is important to us because of the fact that we raised our fee for doing these services effective March 1 through temporary rule process. And any of the agencies that have our fee reflected in their statute no longer meets that need. As I mentioned, I'm sure that maybe some of the agencies have not been able to review these completely, and I have not received, I'm sure, all of the comments that I will. But I thank you for letting me walk through that. I hope that it wasn't too confusing, but those reflect the suggestions and the input from the agencies for making changes this first go-around. We will continue to work with the agencies that have input, and we are open to work on the work group, of course, if you so choose. I have contacted the FBI, our contacts at FBI are all in West Virginia, Clarksburg, and they would be more than happy to participate. They would ask that it be a teleconference and just have a notice so that they could plan for that. And with that, I will stop talking unless you have questions for me along the way.
Any specific questions, members of the committee? It's a lot. Needless to say, this is complex. And, of course, the way it's come about, we have amendments that really replace a lot of the original bill, and it's going to be A lot of it is reordering and reorganizing the original bill, from what I was hearing, and cleaning up some of the duplications that were in the original bill. But it is still a very complex issue. Do you have anyone else from your agency that wants to talk on this?
No, I do not, Madam Chair.
Well, then, without questions, I will ask Andrea to speak briefly.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU. I've testified before in front of you regarding this bill, and I just want to reiterate a few highlights and then do some quick issue spotting for you. Again, we do not oppose part of the concept of this bill, which is to bring it all under one statute to make it clear both for us, for the public, for the state, the police, and for all the agencies and others involved as to their requirements and duties to comply. So to that end, we support that portion of the bill that does that, but we still have concerns. And I have also not been able to take the sufficient amount of time to go over it, so I was listening to Patricia's testimony and taking notes as you all were. However, there are decisions that you will also be making beyond the procedure, and that is adding more and more folks to come under this. And to that, we are concerned, and we hope that you will look at it very critically before we do an ever-increasing expansion of who we can do nationwide criminal background checks. I think I accurately represent the Oregon State Police's position, and Patricia, please correct me. I believe that they support their bill, and what they're mostly seeking here is to set up the practices and policies and procedures. I don't believe they're in here advocating one way or another on inclusion of any agency, the cities, the counties, or anyone else. I think they are trying to set up a vehicle if the legislature makes that decision, but they are not advocating for that. Is that a fair?
That's correct. We're trying to meet the needs of the customers as they contact us.
So each agency and cities and counties need to make their case. And again, we are concerned with the expansion and next session, more folks. With that said, I would like to briefly go over a few points in the bill. I call it issue spotting since that's literally I haven't had a chance to read a lot of it. Again, just to note once more with an underline, we are deeply concerned about the cities and counties being added. It does not appear to require the nexus between the job and the disqualifying prior conduct. It does, on page one, begin to limit that it has to be a fiduciary responsibility or a person in direct contact with vulnerable persons. But again, what is the prior conduct that will put someone who will not be allowed to take the employment? Again, that should not be left to the local entities. That needs to be this body's clear guidelines, and those need to be set into statute as to what the nexus is going to be. Page, and also it allows giving the criminal record back to the local jurisdiction. Again, we're talking about large jurisdictions, and we're talking about very small jurisdictions, and we're talking about more and more people having their hands on someone's very personal information. As I mentioned in my last testimony, for instance, TSPC, the teacher licensing, they are the overseer. They hold on to the record. It's not distributed to the school districts. Department of Education, for the school bus drivers or anyone else from local school districts, they hold on to the record and make the determination based on the criteria. It is not sent back to the local jurisdiction. We think that's critical. Page two, we just note that the return and destroy language in lines 20, subsection 7, we would just want it beefed up more in terms of a hard copy or electronic facsimile. You know, we are deeply troubled. And, you know, I have a lot of people talk to me after I testify, and it can be from both sides of the aisle and all political perspectives about some deep concerns about the FBI and what they're doing with fingerprints. I can't tell you how many people, and you heard maybe public testimony, I wasn't there, who don't believe that they're not holding on to it. And I'm not here to say that they are, but I'm here to say we need to be very cautious. And that's what I'm hearing from community and folks.
Question?
Sure.
If the statute says destroy, Are you proposing there be some recheck of to see if the FBI did destroy, and how would you possibly do that?
Chair Berger, I'm actually not suggesting that, although there'd be lots of things I'd like. It's making sure that they, it says destroy the fingerprint cards, but, and I don't have the old law in front of me, and I don't know if this is in one of the versions or not, but it would be a hard copy and any electronic facsimile and any copies.
So
this, the narrow read, this could be read to mean we can't keep the fingerprint card.
Okay,
but
so you just want what is destroyed, not... I was worried you were going someplace like check the checkers of the checkers to see that they actually did destroy.
Yes, we'd like to send the Oregon State Police back to ensure that they...
That's not where you were going.
Yeah, and Chair Berger, of course, part of our concern is the electronic uses now. I mean, in the old days, they physically sent the card back, and, you know, that was the issue still of making copies, but at least the card was returned. Now we have electronic communication, and that can live in databases intentionally or unintentionally.
Okay. I don't want to belabor this. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't going someplace that I don't think we're going to get.
Page three, and the discussion, and I think this appears later on. I'm looking at lines 6 through 10. A local government that adopts an ordinance describing subsection 2 of the section in consultation with the Department of State Police shall adopt rules to implement the ordinance. Again, that use of consultation, we have two concerns. There needs to be, we believe, someone making sure, someone responsible other than the local entities, if that's where you go, or any agency or anyone else, that the rules that they do craft are in compliance with the guidelines you set out in the statute. Arguably, that should be Oregon State Police. That's recognized here, but the language in consultation is not strong enough. Does that mean Oregon State Police can just say this doesn't seem to pass muster, but, you know, you don't have enough, but we don't have the authority to tell you no, or even that they cannot give advice? There needs to be someone saying no, this isn't sufficient in the state. The other would be that, let's see, I just lost what the other one was. Hold on one sec. Well, yeah, it's both the consultation and someone to make clear that these do or do not comply. So that's still needing to be there. Page 4 and 5, and again, this is a very quick and I haven't had a chance, but I'm still concerned that there's not the nexus requirement in the overall big policy that we've talked about. Again, that the criminal background check and the elimination of a possible job is narrowly tailored. Again, I refer you to another statute, which I don't believe is referenced in here, ORS 670.280, entitled Denial, Suspension, or Revocation of License Based on Criminal Conviction, Denial of License, or Imposition of Discipline. That statute only is limited to, I believe, licensing boards, commissions, or agencies. And again, that statute says you can't just take that they've been convicted. You must make sure that there's the nexus between the relationship between the facts of the crime. We're beginning to lose that because that statute's limited to agencies and others, and now as you widen this, that has to be there for everyone.
I missed the number of the statute you're referring to.
ORS 670.280. And as I gave in my testimony a few weeks ago, I mean, that was part of the critical dynamic at play in the commitment by the legislature years ago. Page 6, again, this is the contested case proceeding. I'm not pointing to a specific line there. I just note that, again, cities and counties appear not to be included in that, which is why another reason that the state should not be giving back these records to the local entities if you proceed with adding them. So there's no appeal process or anything at the local level. And the statute does not, as drafted, include that local level set up any process, and I'm not sure they're capable of doing that. But again, you've got the whole process here and the safeguards that they're looking at doing, and that's going to be lost with outside and maybe the trans and other folks that may be added to this bill that I'm just not aware of would also be lost from that. Page 7, Patricia just mentioned, and so I note that the immunity language, in my quick look at it, does not actually have a good faith requirement. In other words, there seems to be, and I could be wrong because I haven't looked at it thoroughly enough, but I issue spot that there could just be blanket immunity regardless of negligence or bad faith by anyone in handling these fingerprints and doing this. So if we're going to even look at immunity, there needs to be a standard put in there, the good faith type standard, before we give blanket immunity, I think. I want to just note, and I'm almost done, Chair, so I'm not going to go through each agency, but I want to note a few things. And I appreciate the time. I just noted on page 17, section 46, line 11, and this appears, I guess, to be already part of the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners' basis for refusing to provide license to chiropractors. But it's just where we need to be careful and look at things. Line 11, commitment to a mental institution. Now, that will not, information actually will not come from the Oregon State Police, and I believe the Department of Human Services would say they do not provide that information. But that's troublesome for us that that's in there, and I just don't know what else is in with other agencies. We really need to look carefully and critically. Page 29, Department of Justice is included in lines, well, doesn't matter. It's, again, we're concerned that there's the contractor, vendor, and volunteer, that there's no nexus. The Parks and Recreation, Section 55, I'll have you note lines 14 and 15. In addition to the volunteers and others who work in it, they want to do this for appointments to board or commission. We're really troubled. Again, this is the mission creep, I guess, or our concerns of the relevance to that. Section 57, adding the Legislative Administrative Committee. Well, is next session someone going to add you all to it? Because we're getting closer to y'all in this. Again, what's the need? Are we going to do every single government employee? Because that's where we're going. Page 29, is Secretary of State. Again, are they covered under that ORS 670.280, that nexus requirement, or is that another group that's lost and they don't even have to have the nexus? And I've covered a few of the issues, and I think, Chair Ruger, unless there's questions, that's basically my issue spotting for the morning.
Good job in a hurry. I points well taken. I think we're getting the idea. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Andrea, given the complexity of this and given the mission creep of it, as interested as I might be in Representative Galizio's criminal background, could we...
That's in my party.
That's right. Would you be more comfortable, we're now combining everything together and all the different boards together, would you find it more comforting to have it broken apart again so we could look at each one of these boards and what their function is in order to determine the nexus between the background check and the criteria and the job being performed?
Chair Berger, Representative Buckley, I'm not sure that we need to break it out again per se. I think this does... because it's each section. I mean, what we're talking about is setting up a uniform criteria, and that it would, and that's where you need to also pay close attention, is making sure that if we're going to do rules, that those rules have very set criteria that must be met, and including the nexus and the justification and how it's going to be handled. So we're comfortable with that one process. That's better that way than having it delineate. However, and this bill does set forth each. It's just they're thrown in there, but as Patricia went over, each subsection near the end goes over each agency. You need to look critically at each one, the scope of who would come under it for that agency, like I pointed out with Park and Recs, increasing scope, and making sure that it's very narrow within each agency, board, and other jurisdiction or entity involved, and not just using same language as to what their scope is, because it's going to really be different for each.
One follow?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to make sure I'm following what you mean is nexus, I had a conversation with one of the directors of Jackson County Mental Health on this bill, and she talked about some people that have gone through rehab programs who they've been trying to find employment opportunities for. and they've been able to actually find different positions through DHS where they could actually be caregivers or another position. However, their background check might show a drug violation, obviously, because they've gone through rehab. In order for them to be able to tie the individual's criminal background to their current employment possibility, that's what you mean by nexus. Do I have that right?
Chair Berger, Representative Buckley, right. I mean, part of what I mean by the nexus is we hope you wouldn't go. It's not been in the past that if you have a conviction for X misdemeanor or X felony or a blah blah or the equivalent in some other jurisdiction, you're out. Doesn't matter if it was 20 years ago and you have been fully employed and rehabilitated, or if it was a minor offense, it's not relevant to this. And so if you look at page 5, that's where we begin. But we're only providing guidelines. Each author, and I think this is repeated elsewhere, but I just found it right here. Lines 9 onward, each authorized agency, again in consultation with the Oregon State Police, must implement the following sections of rules. So we've got specifying categories of subject individuals who are subject to criminal records checks, specifying the information that may be required from the subject individual, which programs and services, and which crimes. Now, there's a problem with that. It says which crimes may be considered in reviewing criminal offender. We need to be careful. And then I'm really concerned because you're then delegating to all these other bodies and potentially the state and counties to start drafting those rules. And they could say every crime and any reason has a nexus to the employment and you're out. And that's where we worry, that you lose that oversight and control. I mean, I'm genuinely worried. And I think with DHS, they've the lesser entity, the fewer numbers that we've had of agencies that do it in DHS, they are more accountable and they are doing that. But as you give the authority to local cities and local counties and more boards, some will do a fabulous job of really a narrow nexus. Others may not. And I don't know how you need to keep a clear mission as, and that's, again, what OR 677 does a bit. It says, well, you can't just make it everything. You have to clearly articulate. But who's going to verify that they've done it? And is it in the small jurisdictions that it's still, someone could come in contact with vulnerable persons by still delivering the paid materials to the city hall? I mean, I'm just still concerned by a vendor who might deliver things and have no contact with vulnerable persons, but they could be swept in.
We get it.
Yeah, I thought you did.
Yeah. Okay.
Madam Chair, can I ask one question?
Yes.
Have you had a chance to look at the appeals process, and what do you think of that?
Chair Berger, Representative Galluzzio, this is easy. No, I haven't had to look at it. I mean, contested case proceedings are the better way to go. It allows an individual to put on evidence and make their case rather than just the and assuming that's what it is. I haven't checked that.
Okay.
Other than contested case would be troubling.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We're happy to participate in the work group. And
clearly, it's complicated. And we understand that, and that's why we're looking at trying to. And Representative Buckley, your point is well taken about are we doing ourselves any good by getting an omnibus here, sort of putting it all together, or making each one separate. I think the idea is to be consistent, and the only way to do that is look at them together. But I've thought, would it be simpler to take them one by one? And I haven't got an answer for you there, but it's a good question.
Chair Berger, can I just say, I hope you'll take the case of each entity one by one.
Yes, I understand, and that's what the bill does. I'd like to hear from some of these other folks. Kathleen Haley, Board of Medical Advisors, and then Dave McTeague, Chiropractic Examiners. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Good morning, Chair Berger, members of the committee. My name is Kathleen Haley, and I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Medical Examiners. First, let me apologize because I noticed at the top of the page we have the wrong committee on there, and I apologize for that. I didn't catch it till this morning. working on this last night. The Board of Medical Examiners is seeking the legislature's authorization to perform nationwide criminal background checks on its applicants for licensure. And the board hopes that you will favorably consider either the board's bill, House Bill 2059, or the amendments to House Bill 2157, which would authorize the board to conduct those background checks. The board's mission is to protect the citizens of Oregon, and one way in which it does so is through the licensing process. Under the current system, the background checking is limited to the applicant telling the board whether or not they've been convicted of a felony or misdemeanor. And the problem is that we cannot verify that information. The other issue is that 70% of our applicants come from out of state, so even a statewide national or statewide criminal check would not allow us to check on most of our applicants. The board does need to have, before it can authorize these national checks, we need to have the FBI actually has to approve the language of the statute word for word, and we did get that vetted through the FBI in House Bill 2059. I think it might be helpful to give you an example of a case that we've had recently where the applicant applied for licensure in 2000 and the board denied him that medical license because he had been revoked by another state for a felony conviction. And the physician had been convicted of an assault on his wife that involved a weapon. The board was aware of this and did deny that individual a license. Now, he then applied to work on a Native American reservation, and he did not answer truthfully on that. So it gives you an example of how much we have to rely, unless there's been an action by another state. We have to rely on what the applicant says. In that case, we were fortunate in that he did answer truthfully, and we were able to deny that license. The fingerprinting process would be that the board would have those criminal background forms available and we'd send them out to our applicants. We would not hold up the application process because we would grant the license, and then once that information came back and if it was positive, then the board could take actions based upon the falsification and based upon what the nature of that positive information was, because it will vary and the board's response will vary. I think the Oregon courts have been very clear that there has to be a nexus between, and the Court of Appeals has held this, between the occupation you're trying to regulate and what the prior offense was. So the offense in and of itself would not equate to a denial of licensure. Once the applicants are fingerprinted, and that can be done on a local basis, then the board gets the results of that, and then our investigative department works with our licensing group and our board members to make the decision about whether or not the applicant should be denied or whether there needed to be some type of a restriction on a license, which is another option available to the board. This budget in 2005-2007 does anticipate this bill 2059 or the other one being funded through this budget. So it is provided for, and it does not include any increase in fees to be funded. So we are hoping that you will look favorably on House Bill 2059 or the amendment and allow the board to continue its mission of public safety through this check. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. McPhee.
Thank you, Chair Berger, members of the committee. My testimony is similar to the Board of Medical Examiners. Our chiropractic physicians are doctors in a fiduciary position relative to their patients, and it's absolutely critical that we are able to prevent licensure of somebody who has a serious criminal conviction or history or has some issue which provides a nexus that would potentially be detrimental to their patients. The board has to have this information as our essential public protection screen. We encountered a case a few years ago that made us realize that maybe we weren't 100% where we should be in this area. We initiated a contract with the Oregon State Police after getting an executive order from the governor's office putting us on the list of agencies authorized to have access to criminal background history information, and we passed an administrative rule and began fingerprinting our doctor of chiropractic applicants only. And that program has worked very smoothly. However, we're limited to the data in the Oregon, and I guess there's some regional data in there as well. And similarly to the Board of Medical Examiners, our applicants largely come from out of state in origin. They go to chiropractic colleges all over the country, or they're from out of state before they come to the Western States Chiropractic College in Portland. And so we're not really effectively checking the available criminal history information, and the specific statutory language proposed would allow the state police to add us to that list. This is also anticipated in our Board of Chiropractic Examiners budget as a policy package for the additional cost of the FBI check, plus, as you heard, the state police background check costs have recently increased, and we are requesting that we have language similar to some of the other board language that we be allowed to recover those costs as an applicant fee as against what the actual costs are. So we're hoping for amendments or to either 2061 or 2157 that would accomplish this. You have a marvelous opportunity in front of you with this with these bills and the good work by the Oregon State Police in pulling this issue together to do something that really can benefit public protection in this state. You have to, of course, sort out the public policy issues vis-a-vis civil liberty issues, but there's many agencies in this state or many situations that would benefit from good information concerning the criminal history backgrounds of applicants for various positions or licenses or whatever, and it's certainly legitimate for decision makers to have access to pertinent information, and you need to sort out just how far that can go, what the limitations are. So I encourage you in your work in this very important issue.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Questions of either of these folks? Yes, Representative Galizzi.
We have a lot of people
just
to sign.
One more signed up, and then okay. I'm going to open the door to all those folks back there.
Okay. Because I'm just curious, do either of you have data on the percentage of people in your respective professions who've been disciplined by your boards, in other words, during their practice, who prior to licensure had legal, had been convicted of a felony or something like that?
Chair Berger, Representative Galizia, we don't have that ability now to know that. I mean, we rely on what the applicant tells us, or in the renewal of license, the licensee tells us. That's the only avenue for us at this juncture.
Okay.
Yes.
Follow-up. Just reading about the BME licensing department and the... what's the other department? Well, it talks about the process that the licensing department and the investigation department goes through, and it says... the two departments work in concert to investigate the applicant and evaluate his or her fitness for licensure. So, is there specific criteria that is employed in the decision-making?
Chair Berger, Representative Galizia, yes. The same 27 potential violations of the Medical Practices Act for discipline are also under the statute. Those would be potential denials as well, grounds for denial. And that's reviewed by the investigative committee of the board, which is comprised of physicians and public members, and by the full 11-member board, with the advice and counsel of the assistant attorney general who sits in on the investigative committee and on the full board meetings.
Right, and we also are under this nexus statute that's been referred to several times, and our board are public policymakers, much like yourselves, who review all the information and determine if there is any cause for concern. And any proposed denial of an applicant's license is subject to the contested case process before an impartial administrative law judge.
Thank you. Somebody else. Representative Escobar.
Yeah, Madam Chair. Representative Galizio's inquiry, it's been quite some time ago before I had the statistic, but all realtors in the state of Oregon, in order to get a license, are fingerprinted. of those at that time, and I think that was about 8 years ago, 3% of the people that applied could not get a license. And it wasn't because they had just a quote, felony conviction, but it had to do with public consumer protection, where they were, it had to do with money. And of course, as a realtor, you handle money. But there were also people that were convicted of felonies that received licenses because it wasn't related to the real estate industry. So there is some discretion there, and I do know that it is being applied in that part of it. That's it.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thanks very much for your testimony. And Rolf Olson from the nurses, if you'd come and be the last in line here.
Chair Berger, members of the committee, my name is Rolf Olson. I'm one of the two public members on the 9-member Oregon State Board of Nursing. And our executive is down the hall testifying on a budget matter, so she asked me to come by. I've testified not before this committee, but the committee that previously had House Bill 2102. And we have the same predicament as these other boards have, not being able to access the national database that would give us the information we need to know to review applicants for licensure. And we do know on one of the questions that was asked, we do know we have about a third of our applicants for licensure come from out of state. They endorse from out of state. That's about 5,000 nurses every year. And there are 30 states that have a fingerprinting bill for their boards of nursing. And what they've found is that even when there is a law in place that requires fingerprinting, and even when the applicant knows they're going to be fingerprinted and their background is going to be checked, they still are untruthful on their application by the extent of 10 to 15%. So although it's a deterrent, it's not a total deterrent, and we do know that there are misstatements and lack of veracity when it comes down to asking the applicants to self-disclose their history. So that's why we need this. Why we need this bill.
Questions of Mr. Olson? I appreciate you coming down. I know Ways and Means is going over the nursing yes. board, so there's a lot of action in today for the nurses.
Just one big question.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Olson, do you know, you mentioned other states' processes. Do you know of any particular state's process yourself that is a good model for us to look at in terms of how they handle the background checks?
That information could be received quickly, but I can't tell you right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you for coming. And is there anyone else before I proceed who wants to add? Somebody. Hi.
Good morning, Chair Berger, members of the committee. My name is Amanda Rich, and I represent the Special Districts Association of Oregon. This issue of background checks and fingerprinting was brought to me actually by my park and recreation districts, and concerned about being able to check the backgrounds of individuals who may be working with children in some of their after-school programs and some of their recreation programs. And I've been working with Ms. Whitfield, and I'm hoping to further work to make sure that we are actually covering special districts in the local government section. I have concerns about the language that requires ordinance, and I know that we're trying to balance what the FBI needs us to say in the law with what we're trying to accomplish here, and I just hope that we'll be able to continue to work with her to make sure that we're covering special districts, because not all districts accomplish things by ordinance. So we're going to try to figure out if there's a way that we can include special districts in this bill without running afoul of what the FBI needs us to have in there as well. So I just wanted to put that on the record and let you know that we're working on it.
Thank you, Amanda. Questions? Okay. Thank you very much for bringing yours forward. Okay. Anyone else? Members of the committee, I love Mr. McTeague's use of language when he said we had a marvelous opportunity. Right now it looks like a lot of work, and I think it is, but it is also a marvelous opportunity to put this into a more consistent context. We have an obligation to both protect the public when they come before us from folks that shouldn't be doing certain jobs, and with the needs of individuals to be protected from a heavy hand of government, and this is sort of where the rubber meets the road in a really important way. As I indicated, I am going to appoint a work group. I will be available to work with this work group proactively. Don't think you're going to go away and your chair is going to desert you. I would like to appoint Representative Cameron as to be the group leader, and Representative Galizio. So two members will be on this work group. I'm asking that Trish Whitfield from the State Police will, of course, be there. Kathleen Haley, the medical examiners. Kim Colbrain from the nurses. Dave McTeague from the chiropractors. Andrea Meyer of ACLU. Paul Snyder from the Association of Oregon Counties. I have been asked by a number of folks to be a part of it, the City of Portland, the Healthcare Association, and I'm sure there are lots of other special districts. They all want to be, but I'm not going to appoint further. I will tell you that stakeholders, please come to hear and contribute. But there's a need for speed here. The session is progressing, and if we do absolutely nothing, then we just prolong the agony of all these groups in terms of what could, you know, what isn't being resolved. So I am purposefully somewhat limiting the folks that are actually on the work group, but at the same time inviting stakeholders to come and speak to this group about the issues and make sure that they're that everything gets out. Questions from the committee?
Well, okay. Yes. Just in terms of logistics, setting up meetings, how just communicate?
I'm going to start with you two and our committee administrator. We will notify folks of when we're meeting, of when you're meeting. And of course, proposed amendments need to come forth through you two. We'll meet. Okay?
Manager.
Yes.
May I ask that any stakeholders who are interested in notification of this meeting, and it is a public meeting, please leave me an email address or a phone number today and a name so that I can be personally assured that you are notified.
Thank you. Thank you all. Appreciate all your concern. This is tough stuff. We're gonna wade in and do the best we can, knowing how important it is to all of you and how important it is to the state of Oregon. With that, I am going to close this public hearing on House Bill 2157-20, House Bill 2159, House Bill 2061, and House Bill 2102. Thank you all for coming, and thank you very much, committee members. We are adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.